Last week, President Trump's senior advisor and son-in-law, Jared Kushner, flew to Israel to meet with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. The meeting, to discuss an Israel-Palestine peace plan being workshopped by the Trump administration, came at a tumultuous moment for Israel's government.
Even though we had a little event last night, that's not going to stop us. We're going to continue working together. And we had a great, productive meeting, which reaffirms that the alliance between the United States and America has never been stronger.
Netanyahu there speaking about the U.S.-Israel alliance after his meeting with Kushner. But that little event he referred to is actually a very big deal. After Netanyahu's Likud party won the largest percentage of votes in Israel's April elections, the prime minister failed to form a majority coalition. On Wednesday, Israel's Knesset voted to dissolve the newly elected parliament and hold another round of elections in September. Those new elections present a challenge for the Trump administration, which has formed a close alliance with Netanyahu. And the public rollout of a new peace plan is now likely to be delayed even further. Miriam Berger is a freelance journalist based in Jerusalem. Miriam, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you so much for having me.
So the decision to dissolve the parliament and have new elections in September was a bit dramatic. I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit about why Netanyahu's party decided that.
So Israel's government is based on coalition-style parliament, also called the Knesset. And so basically, the prime minister is the one who has the largest amount of seats in his coalition. So it's 120 seats, so you need, in theory, at least 61. So Netanyahu, in the April elections, actually won, his Likud party won the same amount of seats as his main opposition, the Blue and White Party. But overall, Netanyahu had more coalition partners, more other people elected to the parliament on the right that would then partner with Netanyahu. So this system also enables small parties to then sort of have an outlandish role. So in this case, Avigdor Lieberman, who leads an ultra-nationalist but staunchly secular party, so he was pushing for a draft bill to conscript ultra-Orthodox Jews. And this is an issue that's been ongoing in Israeli politics. And so basically, Lieberman refused to join Netanyahu's coalition. He only has 5 seats, but he refused to join the coalition unless his version of the draft bill was promised to be the one that would be pushed through. And so, you know, this one issue then became the symbol for all of these other both sort of ideological and personal fights between all these different parties. And this is largely a fight between the right. And so it's been between Netanyahu's Likud party, who's sort of aligned more in this case with the ultra-Orthodox parties. They have a compromise that they've sort of agreed to. And Lieberman has said he's not backing down.
Mentioned earlier that Jared Kushner was in Israel last week to partly to discuss the Israel-Palestine peace plan. We have a clip here from his interview with Axios's Jonathan Swan about that plan. Let's take a listen to what he said.
I think that there are some things that the current Palestinian government has done well, and there are some things that that are lacking. And I do think that in order for the area to be investable, for investors to come in and want to invest in different industry and infrastructure and create jobs, you do need to have a fair judicial system. You need to have freedom of press, freedom of expression, tolerance for all religions.
And they have freedom from any Israeli government or military interference?
I think that it's a high bar.
Miriam, what does this interview hint at us about Kushner's plan or lack thereof?
Palestinians from the start have said that this plan is biased against them and in favor of Israel's policies. And this sort of confirms a lot of those suspicions. The Palestinians say that they want to end the Israeli occupation and Palestinian sovereignty and freedom. And there's been questions about what that will actually mean in the plan, because as of right now, the approach that the Trump administration has taken has sort of been this two-tier one. They say we're going to focus on the economy first, and then we'll get to the political issues. Palestinians say you can't talk about fixing the economy without talking about the political issues. So, you know, you can't talk about increasing judicial or security issues within the Palestinian polity without addressing the overarching Israeli occupation that informs it. So I think that this is sort of another sign for people that as Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said in some released tapes recently, that he didn't think that it was going to be executable.
Well, I mean, and you mentioned separating the sort of economic plan from the political plan, and yet the president, or President Trump, I should say, has made several decisions that are very political, including moving the United States Embassy to Jerusalem and recognizing the Israeli control over the Golan Heights. Doesn't that add to the fire here? I mean, are the Palestinians willing to negotiate given that?
So exactly. So this is part of why the sort of administration's claim that they're, doing a two-tier system, first economy, then politics, doesn't really add up when you look at actually the overall picture. And, you know, the Palestinian leadership, which is itself has a lot of problems back at home, is, you know, widely against and has said that they're going to boycott the Bahrain conference and, you know, any discussions with the Trump administration. And so, yeah, so you basically have two groups that are just not talking while one of them is seeking to make policy about the other.
How could this peace plan be impacted by the new elections that are slated for September?
That is yet again another complicating factor. So it's unclear. Elections now in Israel will be in September. So a government will be formed by sort of latest November. That's just about the time that President Trump will be kicking off his reelection campaign. And so the likelihood of him, A, pushing through something before Netanyahu, his staunch ally, is back in power and secure, is limited. And then the chances of him doing it afterwards when he's, you know, consumed with the reelection campaign is also seems slight. On top of that all, you also have a looming indictment for Prime Minister Netanyahu over several corruption cases. This has been ongoing for him for years. The sort of next timetable for this is that there's supposed to be a hearing in October regarding his indictment, where the Attorney General has said that he intends to indict him. And so all of this is now very complicated by all of these other timetables. So whether the hearing will still happen at that point for Netanyahu, what that will mean for his own, you know, corruption cases. And that is definitely something that informs his, you know, abilities to form coalitions and his strength domestically, which is something that Trump needs to rely on as well. So it's all a lot of moving pieces that right now aren't set up quite well for a lot of these main players. But I also wouldn't put them past them to, you know, create facts on the ground that benefit them as well.
Miriam Berger is a freelance journalist covering the Middle East. Thank you, Miriam.
Thank you.